And welcome to Subject to Discussion, heard every Wednesday night at 6 o'clock Pacific on LVRocks.com. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly, call me anything you want, just don't call me late for dinner. And I've been off for a week. I was down in sunny Florida visiting friends and some family and a doctor I know down there. And tonight we're going to have Eric Olson from blogcritics.org will be on, and also Koenig Rules from galacticastation.com. And
we're going to.
There you go. That's right. That's right. I am the imperious leader of Subject to Discussion. Thank you. That's Lucifer there, my associate. I don't see the lights going through your hair, but that's King Hesh, right? But anyway, this is actually the first podcast we'll be doing as well. So anybody listening to the podcast, welcome. And podcasting is really taking off. There is a radio station in California called, I think it's KU or something like that. It's all podcasting. So I mean, it's something we should look into for LV Rocks. Anyway, and the website is subject2discussion.com. The email is seanomacradio@yahoo.com. And like I said, tonight will be Eric Olson, and a little bit later will be Koenig Rules from Galactica Station. And next week, I have a big guest, Brad, from The Brad Show from Raw Story will be on. And then the following week, probably one of the biggest guests ever on this show, Tony Masulis, senior producer of MSNBC, will be on. So I look forward to talking to him. And I'm going to start jumping through the news just a little bit. And, of course, we had the while I was gone, you know, the filibuster thing had to be put on hold until I returned to comment on it, of course. But the had seven Democrats, seven Republicans agreed, you know, the centrists, to avoid the nuclear option and the filibuster. And we'll see how that goes. You know, Fred Rogers, a.k.a. Senator Frist, I will frist you. You know, he's upset that Senator John McCain kind of stole his thunder, and some of the Democrats are upset. So I think it's a huge mistake. I think the Democrats just dug in their heels and fought like hell and let the nuclear option go through, because I didn't think Frist would have the votes to break the filibuster. So, but that's over and done with anyway. And then they actually the Senate moved on today, and they confirmed President Bush's court nominee, Priscilla Owen, as a federal appellate judge, ending the four-year ordeal of the Texas jurist who was thrust into the center of the partisan battle over President Bush's judicial nomination. So mainly along a party line, 56-43, the Senate approved Priscilla Owen to the New Orleans-based 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. So the Democrats have used their filibuster powers four times in the past to prevent a vote on Owen, so they're starting to sort through. And then towards the end of the day, Bolton, his nomination was up. You know, Mr. Speedy Delivery from Mr. Rogers. You know, they're starting to debate his nomination, so that's the next battle. Democrats and Republicans reached temporary truce on Bush's judge picks. President George W. Bush moved closer to his goal of putting more more conservative stamp on U.S. courts after Democratic and Republican senators struck a deal, blah, blah. The accord reached late Monday did not give the president all of what he wanted, namely up and down votes of each of the several conservative nominees to the federal bench. Let's see. The bipartisan deal opened the way for three key stalled judicial nominations, including Owens, to proceed while eliminating the political fallout against Bush and his fellow Republicans who control the U.S. legislature. Just as importantly, the compromise appears to have reduced Democrats' ability to block a future Bush Supreme Court pick, which is supposed to be coming up in about 6 weeks. Probably going to be two Supreme Court nominations, because Rehnquist showed up at the Supreme Court the other day in a wheelchair, and I think Stevens is going to retire, or Sandra Day O'Connor. So it might be two openings for George Bush to fill. And reviews are mixed about the filibuster deal. This is from USA Today. This is, quote, nominees that have been waiting for a long time to receive an up-and-down vote will now get one, and that's progress. That being said, we will continue to push for an up-and-down vote for all of our nominees. That was from the White House. Frist, it said, it's our constitutional responsibility to give our judicial nominees the courtesy of an up-and-down vote. The deal falls short. It has some good news, and it has some disappointing news. Harry Reid, whom I've said before, I just do not like him at all. The nuclear option is off the table. How much better could it be? We have sent President Bush, Vice President Cheney, and the radical right of the Republican Party an undeniable message. The abuse of power will not be tolerated. Like I said, he's not what the Democrats need is in a minority leader. I think it should be Senator Dodge should be leading the Democrats, because Reid is a wishy-washy Democrat. And but anyway, and this is in a week. This is from the Washington Post. And in wake of a deal, power struggle looms for GOP. This is from today. The fallout from Senate compromise, a very showdown over judicial filibusters, fell mostly heavily on the Republican Party. Monday's surprise deal left two of the party's most prominent potential 2008 candidates, Frist and John McCain, at opposite ends of an ideological and strategic divide. And also George Allen and Chuck Hagel condemned the deal. So they're already picking sides as we move into 08. And probably one of the best chances of taking that nomination in 08 would probably be George Allen, because he used to be the former governor of Virginia. And the rest of them have been in the Senate for so many years. Like I said, I said before a couple weeks ago, they all have records they could hit over the head with, like they did with Kerry. So, and what else? Special interest groups lose on filibuster. The right got winged. Liberals lost, and Republican leader Bill Frist had his Senate powers hijacked. There were a few defectors and a few sellouts, and that's troubling, said Tony Perkins, head of the Family Research Council. He mentioned three of the seven Republican senators who compromised with Democrats, Senators Mike DeWine of Ohio, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and John Warner of Virginia, said there will be repercussions. That's a threat if I've ever heard one. One conservative group called DeWine, Graham, Warner, and four other GOP dealmakers, the Seven Dwarfs. Another said they sold out the principles. A third called the deal a betrayal of the democratic process and a failure of leadership. So, I don't know. They say they're good and bad on both sides. A lot of Democrats aren't happy, and a lot of Republicans aren't happy. So, and Democrats clear way for Senate vote on Bolton. This is from yesterday. Democrats agreed on Tuesday to clear the way for the Senate to vote on a controversial nomination of John Bolton, speedy delivery, as the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, which is expected to pass mainly on party lines. It's an open debate on Wednesday. Skipping around. The Democrats have harshly criticized Bolton as a hardline conservative ideologue and a bully who tried to pressure intelligence officials into making their findings support his political views. So, I don't know. He's probably going to go through. I did see Senator Voinovich today on the TV on C-SPAN crying about this nomination, how he's got us, you know, he's going to vote against him, apparently, and it's for his grandchildren, his children. So I kind of made me think back of Ed Muskie from years ago on the steps of the, I think it was the Minnesota Capitol House, crying because I don't know what happened there. I think he got dropped as a vice presidential nominee or something. And this is from last Thursday. U.S. can better its poor image in the Muslim world. Here we go. The United States could improve its negative image among Muslim nations with cooperation and foreign aid, a Washington think tank says. Rather than trying failing to persuade Muslims to support American policies in Iraq or Palestine, the United States should publicize its significant development aid to their lands, which, despite soaring aid budgets, is almost invisible to them. That's true. You know, we never hear about how much, you know, foreign aid we're giving to these countries. And then we had, I do have a little soundbite we'll get to after I read this. 14 soldiers, U.S. soldiers killed in 3 days in Iraq. This is from Associate Press writer Paul Garwood from Tuesday. A car bomb exploded next to a U.S. Army convoy in Baghdad on Tuesday, killing three soldiers, while another American died in a drive-by shooting a half hour later. Their deaths push a number of U.S. troops killed in 3 days to 14, part of a surge in attacks that have also killed about 60 Iraqis. 18 U.S. troops have been killed in Iraq during the last week, raising concerns that insurgents may again be focusing their sights on American forces in addition to Shiite Muslims. So, I mean, the bloodshed just keeps on going over there in Iraq. I mean, enough is enough, right? And I think we're ready for that soundbite. I'll play a soundbite from last week from a Senate hearing that Charles Galloway was at, and he was testifying before the Senate, so we'll go to that now. Thanks, Chris.
It's a proven fact that these forged documents existed and were being circulated amongst right-wing newspapers in Baghdad and around the world in the immediate aftermath of the fall of the Iraqi regime. Now, Senator, I gave my heart and soul to oppose the policy that you promoted. I gave my political life's blood to try to stop the mass killing of Iraqis by the sanctions on Iraq. which killed 1 million Iraqis, most of them children. Most of them died before they even knew that they were Iraqis. But they died for no other reason other than that they were Iraqis, with the misfortune to be born at that time. I gave my heart and soul to stop you committing the disaster that you did commit in invading Iraq. And I told the world that your case for the war was a pack of lies. I told the world that Iraq, contrary to your claims, did not have weapons of mass destruction. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to Al-Qaeda. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to the atrocity on 9/11/2001. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that the Iraqi people would resist a British and American invasion of their country, and that the fall of Baghdad would not be the beginning of the end, but merely the end of the beginning. Senator, in everything I said about Iraq, I turned out to be right, and you turned out to be wrong. And 100,000 people have paid with their lives, 1,600 of them American soldiers, sent to their deaths on a pack of lies, 15,000 of them wounded, many of them disabled forever, on a pack of lies. If the world had listened to Kofi Annan, whose dismissal you demanded, if the world had listened to President Chirac, who you want to paint as some kind of corrupt traitor, if the world had listened to me and the anti-war movement in Britain, we would not be in the disaster that we are in today. Senator, this is the mother of all smokescreens. You are trying to divert attention from the crimes that you supported, from the theft of billions of dollars of Iraq's wealth. Have a look at the real oil for food scandal. Have a look at the 14 months you were in charge of Baghdad, the first 14 months, when $8.8 billion of Iraq's wealth went missing on your watch. Have a look at Halliburton and the other American corporations that stole not only Iraq's money, but the money of the American taxpayer. Have a look at the oil that you didn't even meter, that you were shipping out of the country and selling, the proceeds of which went who knows where. Have a look at the $800 million you gave to American military commanders to hand out around the country without even counting it or weighing it. Have a look at the real scandal breaking in the newspapers today, revealed in the earlier testimony in this committee, that the biggest sanctions busters were not me or Russian politicians or French politicians. The real sanctions busters were your own companies with the connivance of your own government.
Wow, that was powerful, and it crystallizes what's going on with this BS in Iraq and everything. Then we have the administration is criticizing Newsweek for publishing a story based on flimsy evidence and sources that caused deaths. I mean, well, hello, Iraq, WMD, 1,800 troops dead. I mean, doesn't that all add up? But anyway, and we had the U.S. is condemning the Saddam photo publication. The U.S. military condemned the publication on Friday, a photograph showing an imprisoned Saddam Hussein naked except for his tidy whities, and ordered an investigation of how the pictures were leaked to a tabloid. And of course, this tabloid is owned by Rupert Murdoch of the Fox News Channel. So I'm sure you haven't heard the hoopla over this as you did over the Newsweek thing, because Murdoch is friends with the Bush administration, with the Fox News Channel and everything else. And it's just nuts. And then I get the story about the when I was in Florida, I picked this up from May 18th about Army recruiters lie about dangers in Iraq. This recruiter is from WLWT's report of Target 5, did an investigation about Army recruiters. And recruiters said, we'll guarantee you a job. We have signing bonuses up to $20,000 in Casper College. When the questions turned to safety, the tri-state recruiters made Iraq sound like a trip to Tahiti rather than a journey to war. The recruiter told this one recruit they have a more chance of dying here in the United States, which is at a 36% die rate, kill rate, here in the United States, people are just dying left and right. You have more chance of dying over here than you do over there. Now, there's an expert, and he says the United States does not have a 36% kill rate. If that were true, more than 100 million people, one-third of U.S. population, would be killed each year. Recruiter also kept on, if you get on the Internet, look up how many deaths there are in Columbia, South Carolina in the past year and a half, and then you compare that to how many deaths there are in Iraq. There are more deaths going on in Columbia, South Carolina. No reason, none, over a pair of Nikes, over a jacket, people stealing people's wallets, shooting people. There are more deaths going on in Columbia, South Carolina. There were 16 homicides in the Columbia in 2004. This year date, the police responded to this. There's only five homicides in the city up to the point of this article in May of this year. So, I mean, it makes it sound like there's, Iraq is like a trip to Hawaii. So anyway, we do have our guest online, Eric Olson from Blog Crits. Eric, are you there?
Yes.
Hi. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Oh, thanks for coming on. And once again, this is Eric Olson from blogcritics.org. And now, first of all, give the listeners out there a little background on Blog Critics for those of them who aren't familiar with your blog.
Well, we are almost 3 years old. We started in August of 2002. The original idea was, at that time, it was still just a few months. Well, it was almost a year, but after 9/11, and the focus really of all the quote-unquote serious blogs and the people who I knew was, the day-to-day events. It was very serious time. People were really concerned about what was going on in the world. Only recently, were people assured. Did they feel assured that things weren't going to continue? We'd had the anthrax. That went on for months. Scare. So people were really seriously following the events of the world, and there was already talk about Iraq and so on and so forth, and, of course, there was fighting in Afghanistan. And the thing was, bloggers, it turns out, or many of them anyway, are very multifarious-type personalities. They like a lot of things. They're interested in a lot of things. And it turned out a lot of these really hardcore sort of political junkies and thinkers and current events guys, people, I don't mean to be sexist, were also really into music and film and popular culture in general. And so we started sort of talking, and I heard several times, and then as I brought it up and talked to more people about it, they said, yeah, I hadn't really thought of it that way, but I do feel that way. They felt sort of a disjunction between the really serious political day-to-day goings on and all these other things that they were interested in, talking about the latest movie, the latest CD. So we said, well, hey, what if we put all of our review-type stuff, all of our pop culture-type stuff together in one place? Then we can have an outlet for it, we can focus attention on it, and if any of us don't feel particularly, comfortable with putting that on our really serious, quote-unquote, political blogs, then we'll have an outlet for it. Mm-hmm. So that's how it began, and it just grew from there. And, of course, once we started, we immediately added politics, so that eliminated that whole rationale of not having politics. But selfishly, basically, I pushed for that as well as a lot of other people, but I realized after only about a month, maybe, I think by about the 1st of September, there was no way I could continue my own blog and run Blog Critics at the same time. So I had to just kind of bite the bullet and make Blog Critics my home site. And that's kind of what it's been ever since. Everyone else, we have almost 1,000 writers now.
Wow.
I think it's 970-something.
Bless you.
And all of them have their own blogs. And we don't ask anyone to give us any writing exclusively. We, in fact, encourage people to post whatever they write for us to their own blogs as well, and that's worked really well. It prevents resentment if people think they're not getting, a good enough deal of just giving us their stuff. Plus, it's also great cross-promotionally because we're trying to help all of our bloggers. We want them to do better. We want them to get more exposure. We want them to get the Google juice. We want them to be able to avail themselves of the fact that we're a Google News source and that we provide reviews to the Advanced family of sites, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it has to be mutually beneficial or else no one would participate.
That's true.
We've sort of felt things out as they've gone. We handled it pretty organically. I never want to take more credit than is due to me. I've just kind of supervised while people have done their thing, and it's grown very, very organically. So that's basically what it is. As I say, we have almost 1,000 writers now. We're quote unquote, I guess, top 20 blog, depending on your classification. And yeah. We're real enthusiastic about the future and really looking to keep moving ahead.
Yeah, I see the I go to Truth Laid Bare a lot, and I see you're about, I think we're like 18th in the rankings there. You and like Crooks and Liars are kind of like neck and neck there.
We go anywhere from probably 15 to 25, depending what's going on at any given time. I think we're actually somewhat underrated on the linking side of things, because ironically, we don't really function like a blog. Literally this microcosm. Excuse me, I have to cough. I had a really bad cold that I only got over in the last few days. So
I hope you're right there.
Please forgive me if it's not
the Bush administration sending the virus, is it?
Problems, but anyway, ironically, we function basically as you've seen, noticed, I'm sure, from just looking over the site. Essentially, we're a magazine that happens to be written by bloggers. So because we have so many different voices, we don't really have a distinct personality in terms of political position or really anything. We really are a microcosm of the entire blogosphere. And, sure, it's only a tiny percentage of the millions and millions, but it's also by far the largest gathering, of bloggers in one place of any site. I mean, there's nothing close. Excuse me.
That's all right.
There is, Metafilter, but the people aren't really identified individually.
Mm-hmm.
They're not identified as bloggers and then link back to their home sites.
Yeah.
And Flashdot is somewhat similar. But, they're not really a collection of bloggers per se.
True.
Like we are.
True.
Ironically, because we don't have a really identifiable personality. We're not coming from a given political perspective. We're covering the whole spectrum, in fact. We probably get fewer links than comparable sites in terms of traffic and whatnot, even though we have links from all our own members. It's kind of funny. We always laugh about that we are underrepresented on the link side versus the traffic side.
Yeah. Now, what's the big news on the site right now? I'm on the politics side. Let me switch over to the main American Idol, huh? Is that getting a lot of play? This is the big finale.
Well, American Idol is on right now.
Uh-oh.
As we speak.
Ah.
So, and I'm in the East, so I'm going to hear who wins.
Well, you can make the announcement live. This will be an exclusive.
You have to tell me if you want me to be a spoiler here.
Why not? Well, what the hell?
Before 10 o'clock my time, I'm in the Cleveland area, which is Eastern time.
Because we spoil Battlestar Galactica spoilers at the end of the show, so we might as well spoil American Idol while we're at it. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, we'll warn them.
But now, the big thing is now, how did the filibuster deal play on Blog Critics?
Well, it's interesting.
What do you think about it?
We cover things on a semi-random basis, because we aren't directed. In other words, people pick and choose their own stories.
Mm-hmm.
I do provide. We have a Yahoo group that about a third of the members, I don't know what it's up to, probably 350 of the members belong to. And besides channeling review material, in other words, I make CDs, books, DVDs, movie tickets, concert tickets available to the members for review. I also forward news stories, but we have found our niche, our really core niche, is where politics and entertainment and technology all sort of come together.
Mm-hmm.
So, we covered really strongly the whole digital music war when it was really bubbling and all the downloading. When it was at its most controversial, and the Napster trial, and then subsequent changes in policy and changes in direction, and then when the legitimate services began, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
That was kind of a combination of all of those things that we're interested in.
And also,
but we do not cover, I would not say we are comprehensive in our coverage of politics across the board, because, as I say, in general, people just kind of post what they post and make those decisions. And I've noticed it's interesting, you know, I see it as the editor, I sort of get an overview of everything that's going on from the site, of course, besides what I write myself. And I've certainly noticed my own political writing has died down. I mean, I just haven't maintained the interest after the election and after things became more of a definite direction became clear in Iraq. And I think I've seen kind of the same thing across the board on the site, that sure, we do cover politics and people talk about things, but there hasn't been the passion, there hasn't been nearly the interaction and the craziness as there was leading up to the election, which of course you'd expect. But then also about Iraq, you know, even the most anti, I shouldn't say even the most, all but the most anti, most really staunchly anti-war people at this point pretty much say, well, okay, look, you know, we are where we are. There have been some things that we wouldn't have expected that have been positive. The whole Lebanon thing, the changes in the in some of the policies and some of the just general atmosphere throughout the region that most people pretty well concede is at least related to the action in Iraq. You know, they won't necessarily go with the cause and effect, but they'll at least say, you know, they're a tone was set and that has changed. The general relationship between the governed and the governed throughout the Middle East. And I believe that's my general position on it. And you know, people get worn out with Iraq because there doesn't seem to be a whole lot we can do differently.
No.
Most people, you know, don't really think it's feasible for us to just pull out. And yet you still, you know, almost daily, and lately certainly daily, you know, you have these just horrific terrorist incidents and civilians and Iraqis primarily lately, which I suppose from an American perspective is something of a relief, but from a human standpoint it's certainly not a relief.
No, because they're losing hundreds
it's
people.
It's an ugly situation that we probably can't do much differently about for now.
Yeah.
But back to your question about the filibuster, I don't feel personally that strongly about it. Other than that, I am sort of startled by this sense of entitlement that the Republicans have, and it's I'm amused by it. I am in awe of it in some ways. You know, to have such nerve, such balls to think that we want these judges, and since we want these judges,
we're going to get them.
We deserve these judges.
Yeah, the arrogance is amazing.
We're
going
to change the way this has been done for 200 plus years because we're not getting our way. I mean, even if I sympathized with, you know, the political stance, which actually I don't. I did vote for the first time in my life Republican. I did vote.
Oh no!
I was strongly pro-war. Very strongly pro-war, still am. Feel that it was necessary. I'm not happy about the what appears more and more fairly clearly to be the dishonest approach to get there. I'm not happy about that. But I do think that as policy, it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I would much rather that it simply been flat out told to the American people and the world. But realistically, I'm not sure that would have been possible. I'm not sure that Bush could have got up there and said, well, look, the Mideast needs an enema, and Iraq is probably the most logical place for us to give the Mideast an enema. And we need to get in there, blow people up, throw our weight around, and Iraq is the place to do it. I don't think if he would have put it like that, which is really the bottom line core truth, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have gone through. So, you know, I don't want to believe, I haven't wanted to believe, that there was just flat-out abject dishonesty, although, you know, maybe there was. I'm willing to say at this point,
It certainly looks like
that,
it.
That it's not an unreasonable position to take.
Yeah, well,
but I've never been. I'm not a Republican, and
yeah.
I've never been a Republican. I've never voted for a Republican president. I saw that you were a
Clinton-Gore
representative.
Absolutely.
I very much pro Clinton. I like
yes.
Clinton a lot. I decry, like everyone else, his personal foibles, and am sad that will forever be a blot on his record because, politically and policy-wise, he's very much what I am, very much a centrist, a social liberal,
yeah.
a fiscal moderate, and although I'm not pro-death penalty
yeah.
at all, that always kind of didn't strike me as really fitting him. I think that may have been triangulation.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem to fit the rest of his personality and the rest of his approach. But anyway, I was always very much pro Clinton, and I think in many ways he did an excellent job.
Yeah.
And
what do you feel about Hillary getting in there in 2008? It looks more and more like she's going to run.
Well, I feel much more positively about her as a candidate, as a realistic candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Than I did before. I suppose, just about everyone thought she was too liberal, no way, too much baggage, too many issues, the whole health care debacle, coattails of Bill, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm still not convinced that she could win, but I think that she could be a very plausible nominee. And I think she has done, she's doing some classic Clintonian triangulation.
Yeah.
I mean, she's certainly positioning herself toward the middle, and she's doing the right thing. And I think the way she's viewed in her home state is very positive. I think she certainly convinced the average New Yorker that she deserves to be where she is, and that she's serious, and that. That she represents them quite well.
Yeah.
So I think she's only done positive things for herself since she's been in office.
Mm-hmm.
And, overall, I feel favorably toward her. As I said, I'm, for the first time in my life, I ended up in a very strange political place, finding that I was essentially a one-issue voter this last time, and just didn't feel didn't trust Kerry with continuing the war with the zeal that I felt was necessary once it had been begun. But there's not all that much else that I agree with Bush on.
Yeah,
there's
well,
very little domestically, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So getting back once again, I digress, as you see, but I do tend to end up back where I'm supposed to be, usually anyway.
Right.
Back to the filibuster. I'm not really, I'm not much in favor personally. My personal beliefs do not coincide with the majority of the conservative judicial nominees. But even apart from that, even if I was in favor of them, I don't see anything wrong at all with what gets labeled a little judicial activism.
Yeah.
Obviously we've seen that the conservatives don't mind it either as long as the activism is going in their direction.
Exactly.
We certainly saw that with the
Schiavo
case, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and they're threatening the judges, and I was down in Florida last week, and oh boy, I made the wrong big mistake, and I said I'm a Democrat because Randall Terry was in the middle of that mess, and one voice they're saying these judges are activists and we should go after them, and next minute they're fighting with the Democrats to approve these judges. So make up their mind, they want the judges or they don't. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. there's a real inconsistency there, and I think that's part of why there's a lot less certainty right now. I think the positions aren't very well defined right now because you have so much mingling and mixing and people going in different directions. And I'm not sure how I would have handled the election if it was this year, because a lot of things have happened that may come close or may have come close to overwhelming my really strongly pro-war position. You know, at some point, you can't, unless you're just a moron, which I don't think I am, you can't hold on to a single position and let it dominate absolutely everything forever. And even by the time of the election, I there were a lot of things I was concerned about. I'm much more pro-environment. I'm absolutely against, drilling in Anwar. I want to see support and development of alternative fuel. I'm very much more pro-environment. I do generally agree with Bush, and I'm definitely a free trader.
Yeah.
I'm not a protectionist.
Neither am I.
Don't go with that. That's another thing I very much liked about Clinton.
He signed NAFTA.
Pro economy.
Exactly.
Free trader. Like I say, in a general sense, he represented how I felt certainly at the time. It turned out that he didn't give enough attention to foreign policy, at least in the areas that in retrospect we found out that he should have. But I'm not sure he deserves the kind of blame that he's had heaped on him either. Bush wasn't paying any attention to it either.
Yeah.
Until 9/11.
Exactly. And now look what happened. He's $300+ billion later, and we're still in that mess over there. You know what I mean?
Yes, we certainly are. Mm-hmm. And there's no question it's a mess. The question is it a mess that's worth it? And at this point, I'm still willing to say, yeah. But, the longer it drags on, the more deaths. I mean, it's hard. What I ended up doing regarding the whole war situation, the whole Middle East, the whole war on terror, just that whole mindset, is I really did have to abstract it out to policy. If you look at it on the day-to-day basis, if you look at it on the human level, hey, I'm a person too. I care about people. I have four kids, a wife. I have a daughter, 21, a son just about to turn 18. I can imagine how I would feel, if they were in the military and they were in that position. And I try to be honest with myself and say, I would still think that as policy it was the right thing to do. But, I can certainly empathize. But what I've had to do is sometimes I think at times in history, the leaders and those who are providing their base, in other words, those voting for them, I believe you really do have to look at the long range, the big picture, and think abstractly. And I still think in this case that the biggest picture of literally pulling the rug out from under the Middle East and the way things were run and the status quo and the mindset of the rulers and the ruled, and of course coming to terms with and dealing with, on some level dealing with the fanaticism bred by the conditions, the political conditions, and encouraged tacitly or not by those environments of the Islamic terrorism, fundamentalism, craziness, not just fundamentalism, but the craziness.
Yeah.
And we certainly were held up as scapegoats, and we had to do something about that. And I think, it'll be argued for decades and longer, centuries, was it the right thing to do? Could we have done something else? I'm not unsympathetic to the idea that, we should have finished up, quote-unquote, in Afghanistan before we moved on. It's still not, quote-unquote, finished now.
That's true. It's still going on over there.
Of course. And again, I freely admit, it's a mess. And
yeah.
I hate seeing our people killed. I hate seeing the terrorist network that has taken root there, killing civilians every single day. I hate that, and it kills me. And that's part of why I haven't paid as much attention lately as I had before, because I can't take it on a personal level.
Yeah.
But on the abstract level, on the biggest level, I do think something had to be done. I think that Iraq was the place where it made the most sense. It was a possible thing to do. The environment was such that it was feasible to do it. Yeah. It wasn't feasible in Iran, and still isn't, which is why we haven't really done anything.
That's true.
Even though they're the ones developing nuclear weapons.
Same thing with North Korea.
It wasn't feasible in North Korea for the same reason. And, of course, North Korea is not in the Middle East anyway.
Yeah.
And we're really talking about the Middle East. That's the focus of this issue. And so,
Eric, I don't mean to cut you off, but we're running out almost up the end of our time here.
Oh, geez, Louise.
Yeah,
okay.
It kind of flew through here. But once again, this is Eric Olson from blogcritics.com. I got my Galactica update coming in like 2 minutes. But I want to give the listeners out there any information about the site before we go.
Well, welcome you all to come by. We have open comments. We do about 500 comments a day. We have very lively discussions on all topics. We cover music. We cover books. Film, TV. We've been covering American Idol. I've been personally covering the Michael Jackson thing. We do politics, of course. We do tech, and we invite people to come by, leave comments, say hi. We invite bloggers to join, and it's just blogcritics.org, and we're always there. We put up on the average of 60 stories a day during the week.
Wow, very good. Well, Eric Olson, I thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Sean.
No problem.
I hope I didn't blab too much.
No, it's all right. It's all right. And we'll look to have you back in a few weeks, all right?
Excellent.
All right. You have a good one now. Thank you.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Eric Olson from blogcritics.org. And, whoa, he can talk. He should be a politician. I tried to get in there a few times, but I don't think you heard me trying to get in there. But I hate when Mike... show was hijacked. But I want to get to this thing about from Paul Craig Roberts. He had a, before we bring on Koenig Rules about his Galactica update, we had a Paul Craig Roberts. He was from 81-82. He served as the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for President Reagan. And he wrote an article saying that the reputation in tatters. George W. Bush and his gang of neocon warmongers have destroyed America's reputation. It is likely to stay destroyed because at this point, the only way to restore America's reputation would be to impeach and convict President Bush for intentionally deceiving Congress and the American people in order to start a war of aggression against a country that posed no threat to the United States. America can redeem itself only by holding Bush accountable. Abundant evidence now exists in the public domain to convict George W. Bush of the crime of the century. The secret British government memo dated July 23, 2002, leaked to the Sunday Times, which is the DowningStreetMemo.com. There's a website for it now as well. Reports that Bush wanted to remove Saddam through military action, justified by the conjunction of terrorism and weapons of mass destruction. But the intelligence and facts were being fixed around the policy. But the case was thin. Saddam was not threatening his neighbors, and his weapons of mass destruction capability was less than that of Libya, North Korea, or Iran. The United Kingdom Attorney General said that the desire for regime change was not a legal base for military action. There were three possible legal bases: self-defense, humanitarian intervention, or UNSC, UN Security Council authorization. The first and second could not be the base. Could not be the base in this case. Relying on UNSCR 1205 of 3 years ago would be difficult. This memo is the mother of all smoking guns. Why isn't Bush in the dock? Has American democracy failed at home? So there you go, right there. I mean, I heard a couple people trying to mention that Downing Street memo, Hardball last night, and also today on Connected, and they're not getting that story out. But DowningStreetMemo.com has it on there, and it just seems like the issue, you know, the Bush administration is just high-handed. All the stuff just gets shoved away. It's not being trumped out like it should be. Then we had these troops. We have troops. Troops having sex with teen girls over in Iraq. There's two girls aged 14 and 15 are talking to American soldiers south of Baghdad on Friday. This was last week, or a while back, excuse me. And the soldiers suggested they accompany them to their camp and take pictures, but then collectively raped the pair. One of the girls died after she was raped by 18 soldiers, while the other was killed by her family, because sex is heavily shamed over there in Iraq, and then the girls are put to death. And reports that American troops were raping young Iraqi girls There's a letter the CAIR received anonymously from a soldier who was recently returned from Iraq, claims that a commanding officer engaged in inappropriate conduct with prepubescent Iraqi girls. The letter states that the officer who was named by the writer referred to the girls as pre-ragheads and coerced local Iraqi leaders to provide them in exchange for protection by American soldiers. And also, Muslims seek Pentagon probe of Iraqi soldier signs saying he killed boy's father and impregnated sister. So you know, the kids holding up a sign says, Lieutenant Corporal Boudreaux killed my dad, then he knocked up my sister. I mean, what is this going on? Then we had that one from last year about the soldier killing an Iraqi teenager after sex, but the soldier having a 17-year-old soldier, homosexual sex up in a guard tower. He killed the guy. He shot him, how many rounds? He shot him 11 times with the carbine after they had gay sex. And the officer was born in Veracruz, Mexico, has a wife and a toddler son. Then we had, of course, the cover-up about the Tillman death. So the football player went over to Iraq. It was a friendly fire, 100-page report by Brigadier General Gary Jones of the Army Special Operations Command found that the Army did not tell his family or the public that Tillman had been killed mistakenly by fellow Rangers until weeks after his nationally televised memorial service. The Army found that the leaders, General John Abizade, head of the U.S. Central Command, had been informed before the May 3, 2004 memorial service that Tillman had died from friendly fire. Central Command issued the statement on May 29, 2004. Tillman died of result from friendly fire, and even burned his bloody clothes and everything. So it's nuts. So I think we'll be joined by Kena Gruels. Kena Gruels. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Kena Gruels. I want to have your sound effects ready for you. I kind of pulled the trigger a little early on the Cylons here. I get ahead of them a little bit.
But
there you go.
Oh, there we go.
There you go. And once again, this is Kena Gruels. He drops in for.
There
you go. With our Battlestar Galactica update once every week or every 2 weeks, whatever it is. I wasn't here last week, so it just seems like it was yesterday we were talking.
Yep.
Right? So
yep.
What news do you have for us this week?
Well, I'll start out with some confirmation. Saw those deaths that I reported a couple weeks back have been confirmed.
Oh.
Tarn.
I want to update that. We've got a lot of new listeners this week because we're also being podcast.
Tarn dies either at the end of episode one or the beginning of episode two.
Okay. Tarn is a name that Sosnus or Alonzo Yarson gave some of the unnamed officers
right.
on Battlestar Galactica. And
right.
Tarn
is Sinus does die in episode two.
So Sinus himself does die. Okay.
Crashdown does die in episode three.
Crashdown dies. Sam Witwer, former guest of Subject to Discussion.
Right.
Right.
And Galactica Boomer
Ooh.
Dies in episode four.
Really? Oh, she's
not
the one that shot Adama.
Not the Caprica Boomer.
Ah, well, she shot Adama, right? So...
Right.
Is somebody going to kill her? Is it going to be like a murder mystery set on board the Galactica or what, I wonder?
I don't know.
Wow.
They're playing some of this close to the chest, so they're not revealing too much there, you know, in terms of how these characters die. But they finished pretty close to four episodes now filming, so that's why...
And of course,
that's have been confirmed.
2 weeks ago, he dropped the big bomb on us that towards the end of the season or the last episode of the season, the Galactica, you know, trips over another Battlestar.
Right. My source is saying is in the cards for episode 10.
Ah.
But no more details than that right now.
Any idea that it could turn out to be a Cylon plant, that actually it's a Cylon Battlestar and end up fighting
one another? I really think that Ron Moore is going to probably introduce possibly, you know, a Pegasus reimaging. I do. And Kane, he wanted to do that particular story, so, you know.
Yeah. And what other big news do you have for us?
Billy, who's Laura's assistant, they didn't know whether his pilot, his television pilot, he did a pilot for a TV series.
That's right.
Was going to get picked up or not. If it was going to get picked up, Billy, who's played by Paul Campbell, was going to die in episode five.
Wow.
But the pilot didn't get picked up. So he's on for the rest of the season.
Wow. Oh, Darth Marley is saying, "Be Arthur for Kane." Huh? How am I thinking of?
What was that? Be Arthur.
Be Arthur from Golden Girls. He wants her to play Kane. I can almost sing that song. Thank you for being a friend. You can have the old hag on there playing Yoda if you want. Who's that? Estelle Getty or E.T. But so Billy is staying around, right?
Billy
pile
staying
around. Picked up. Any other surprises?
Elosha, the high priestess.
Ooh, yes.
She's gonna die in episode 6.
What the hell? Would they kill her off?
Yeah.
Really? Why are they killing her? She's like the representation of the religious aspect of the show.
I can't
believe it. Wow.
I have a feeling that that maybe this cast is getting way too big and support the primary one's salaries.
I guess. She's not a regular, though.
Eliminate some of the supporting cast.
Yeah, Elosha only showed up, like, I think, once or twice during the run
of the... Yeah, you're right. Well, she was prominent in the miniseries, I think. Twice, maybe? I mean, but they weren't particularly big moments.
No, but, well, she was in that ending scene in the miniseries when...
Exactly.
Yeah, so say we all, and then, Dom would get up and give his speech and everything. So
I'm just wondering if now that they're having Hatch on as a regular, that they're probably paying him a lot more money than some of these others. So
they got to cut the cast down to pay for him.
Yeah, speaking of which, Hatch and, I think I mentioned this, Hatch and Dirk Benedict are going to be at GateCon in Vancouver for Galactica this summer.
Really?
So,
my invitation seems to be lost in the mail. I haven't been invited to that yet. You think I would be here? All the PR I'm giving that show, I think they at least invite me up to the damn thing,
Right. Well, maybe... Just maybe I'm going to start a rumor. Maybe they're going to try to pitch something to Dirk again.
Really?
Yeah, let me start that rumor because that's what happened with Hatch. Ron Moore met him at one of the conventions and they talked.
Yeah.
And Hatch said, if the part is good enough, I'll star in the series.
Yeah. He's nuts. He wants a paycheck. He could care less. They could have him bartending on the Galactica and they would have given him the job. I mean, he hasn't been in the show in years. And
that's right.
Who is he kidding? Would you pass up a check like that if they offered it to you?
Nope.
Hell no.
Not
I'd be on there in a heartbeat.
That's right.
But I think they should have me on there playing the Imperious Leader. I'd wear the whole mask and the, But now, any other news from the show? I
mean, the one thing that's been confirmed, and I checked with Sky One too, that they're going to start airing in the UK. Battlestar in October.
Oh, really?
Now they're going to have to wait,
and
we're going to be getting it in the States sooner than that.
Huh? Now, why in this day and age can't they air them simultaneously? Like, I mean, hell, Lucas can get Star Wars on all over across the world.
I know.
Why can't Galactica air? Friday nights in the United States and Friday nights in the UK. I mean,
I don't know, but I remember with some sci-fi shows that I'd be watching when I'd be growing up, they wouldn't get to Britain for years.
Yeah.
And then, vice versa, Britain would be getting all these shows that America would never get.
I don't know.
They never got their
ads
together. But the thing is, they're going to be showing all 20 episodes back to back.
Oh.
So they're going to be seeing the final 10 episodes before we do.
So we're back to that again.
I know.
I don't know. Why can't they get that together? And now, what's the thing about they skipped an episode? They skipped Flesh and Bone in the reruns. Any story why they skipped Flesh and Bone? Do you know?
I don't know because I do know that 1 week or two, it's going to be interrupted due to movie marathons. Probably this week it will be because there's a 4-day Memorial Day movie marathon. So maybe because of these specials.
On the board,
did that. But Flesh and Bone was an excellent.
Yeah,
it was really good. And my guess is, remember when Roslyn was having that dream down on a planet?
Yeah.
That's the planet that that she heads toward, Kobol, in episode 5. So, I mean, that's a significant
episode.
That's a significant episode
yeah.
because it And right? It links it up with a lot of the others.
Exactly, and they did all those homages to Star Trek. I know they had that thing with the window with Leoben and Starbuck, like Kirk and Spock did, and Wrath of Khan
right.
and all that stuff.
Right.
And, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know why they skipped that.
They said, I've been looking on the net, they said that maybe it was not politically the right thing to do, but I would have thought that, when it was first airing, it was closer to the time that Abu Ghraib, the prison thing was going on. I can't see how possibly it's more political now than it was back then.
I hope they're not getting like that. Concerned about the damned political season.
Moore wants to hit these contemporary issues.
Yeah.
He said
that in his blog. He wants the people to think about what's going on and how it relates to real life here in the United States and across
right.
the world. I hope they're not going to get like that, because then they'll just homogenize the whole series if they start doing that. I don't think they'll do that, though.
Let's hope not. I just think it probably is the case that they have a couple interruptions, and so that unfortunately was the episode that got hacked.
Yeah. Now, anything in your reporter's notebook on your Colonial Confidential here about Kane going to take Adama's place and Olmos is going to get, dispatched to...
I really think that Olmos is going to be on for the long haul.
Really?
I mean, he could have been negotiating salaries like...
But you heard that rumor too, didn't you? That they're going to do that, they're going to send Adama, he's so sick, they'll send him to some kind of nursing home ship, in the fleet, and then Kane will take over, and then Olmos will make a guest... Yeah, I hear all these rumors, and then Olmos will make guest appearances, kind of like a Obi-Wan, anything's possible with that show. And I heard
that's
another one.
I mean, if they can be killing off all these characters...
They'd save a lot of money with Olmos.
Would they kill off Apollo? Would they kill off Starbuck? Kill off...
Laura.
Rosalyn.
I don't think they'll kill off the Chief.
I hope not.
No,
but,
I don't think so. But
anything's up for grabs on this show, and that's probably why Ron Moore's doing it, to keep people tuned in,
I even heard that they'll divide the fleet up in half and send the Pegasus off with half the fleet and the Galactica will take off with the other half. So, I don't know. You hear
and
all
then
we'll these.
Then you have two shows.
Then you have two shows. I don't know if we can handle two of these shows. And then, of course, there's the Space 1999 rumor that I heard that they're supposed to be going to redo that.
Where did you hear that?
I heard that, and I was in a sci-fi chat room, so we know how reliable the chat rooms are. But, that'd be interesting. Space 2199 or something that's on sale, isn't it? Space 2199? Something like it's on sale at Walmart. But, that'd be kind of nice, too, if Ron Moore would dig into that, and do a 1999.
Sean, I wanted you to clarify something because a rumor started about me.
Uh-oh.
That I'm getting paid by people to do Galactica updates.
Believe me, you're not getting paid to do my show.
The people out there that you're not paying me.
No, absolutely not. Actually, he's paying me to come on the show. No.
I don't know how that started either.
Well, you have all these rumors,
I wouldn't be taking money like that.
Well, Koenig, we'll let you go. The show's almost over. There you go. Thank you, Koenig.
Hopefully, I'll have something in the next couple weeks.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. I keep destroying his name. It's Koenig Rules. I got Koenig because it's K-O-E-N-I-G. I came with Walter Koenig from Star Trek. So it's Koenig Rules from Space 1999. There you go. So anyway, that was a nice show. We had one guy kind of talked on and on and on, but it was all right. And like I said, next week will be Brad from Brad Blog from Raw Story. And then the following week, Tony Macillas, the senior producer of MSNBC Connected, will be on. And website subject number 2, then discussion.com. Email is seanomacradio@yahoo.com. And next is Sob Lofton. Friday is Spank Wagon, followed by King Hesh. And Sunday is Tap Out. And thank you, good night, and have a pleasant tomorrow.